Friday afternoon deploy still needs to Google the difference between an analogy and a metaphor. Ah, there's the red eye of Sauron. That means everything is watching forever now in eternity.
So I'm going to say that I'm just going to be upfront about this. I'm not going to record using my video camera at all today because my image has a mustache and I don't right now. So I'm leaving my image there for posterity.
We appreciate that. The viewers, should we have a few, will particularly appreciate that. We're doing something a little new today for anybody, for all those listening. We're bringing you into a Lofty Labs closing ceremony, and we're really excited. We're actually, you're going to hear new voices, some folks on the team that you may not have heard from yet, people that you'll hear from going forward. As well as we've got a video up for any video presentations or video in the presentations that we have. So we'll post that to video platforms of YouTube and Instagram and wherever else Chris seems fit to put a video because he knows that stuff better than we do. You're seeing some faces and hearing some new voices. It's exciting stuff. For those who wouldn't know about our labs today, we've mentioned them in podcasts before. But every other Friday, we take a day basically as a professional development day and let everyone chase whatever shiny thing has been in front of them and just explore that, lean into the tech, do some reading on it, do some coding on it, whatever they want to do to pursue that. And so we've got some folks who've done some long running ones, kind of working on things in 2-week chunks. We've got folks who've started off new things. And so this is just an opportunity for us to get together as a team and explore that. And one of the cool things is you'll get new voices because we always make sure our labs days include our entire company. We don't want that mindset of thinking about new things and exploring new spaces to be limited to the engineers. So our product owners are there. Our administrative staff is there. Our head of marketing is here. And this is kind of a labs day project for him. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah. It's good. It can make up for my other one.
That's right. Because you confess to us all that you had failed for your labs day and not done anything. That's good. Well, this will be a good penance.
Maybe this can make up for it. See, I didn't know that this was a pro mustache workplace when I was hired. And I really wish I had, because I was growing mine for months before I started. And I will share... in solidarity with Joseph, I will share my picture.
Oh!
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That jumps Casey's. And Casey had a powerful mustache.
I don't want to speak out of turn. Casey looks like a retired Civil War general. I don't want to take anybody's space there. But it was strong. It was strong.
You got to bring it back.
I think I'm going to anyway. I mean, why fight it, right? I know, right? Like, why fight?
Yeah, Alan's is out. Like,
it's amazing. It's amazing.
That's a foot of mustache. Easy. Yeah. More like almost two.
Yeah.
It would take. I would need to hire someone to separate the mustache out of the beard here at one point, and then it would be full on Yosemite Sam.
No, I like it. I like it. Sure.
That's good stuff. So, yeah,
I'm sporting the wizard beard for those that. But now we have a video. I'm used to describing everything, so now I don't have to talk as much. This is great. I'll just stop there. You'll see.
We'll hopefully do more of these with the video as well, so you can watch them and stuff. That's always fun. Today will be a little less taco trucks and complaining about JavaScript, although I'm sure somebody's probably touched some JavaScript in their labs day, and so that might surface. But we're gonna try and keep our conversations to about 5 minutes a piece and get through them. We're gonna let Will come in. For those of you who obviously most of you would know Will, he's one of our product owners. He is our first East Coast person, so he graces us with almost basically an extra hour to his workday, oftentimes by sticking around for stuff like this. So we're gonna let him go first. Feel the freedom, Will, to drop as soon as you're done talking about where you spent your day, and enjoy your weekend, sir.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I've been growing this since I started. I don't know if you guys can see.
Nice. Yeah, it's
thanks.
Nice.
Thanks a
I
lot.
Like it.
So I couldn't do that if I tried. You can borrow. I got some wax I got to give you. Yeah.
All right. So today, I spent a bit of time. Joseph and I have been meeting a lot since I've started on processes and just, you know, kind of getting on the same page with, you know, with how we want to, you know, act as product owners within the team here. And so really just doing a bit and trying to bring some of those documents that we have stored in Google Drive. You know, I've got a few docs out. Joseph was working on stuff. And so we really wanted to bring those into our handbook, one for new hires, right, to be able to have all that information at their fingertips without having to search through Drive and find all those documents. And two, for us as a team, right, so that we can, you know, use these as living documents. And as we evaluate and think about processes and talk about how we want Agile at Lofty to work, we'll have these as a reference point so that we can make those updates to best fit our team here. So I mean, nothing groundbreaking here, but just wanted to show some of the pages. Let's see, Joseph, what did we do? We've got just a general product owners page. I'm looking forward to adding some mugshots of us in here. Really expanded on our Agile at Lofty page and wanted to drop in some hierarchies, some child pages, but, you know, just for the team to be able to reference, you know, some of the formalities around, you know, ceremonies and documentation that we found have worked best here. So really just putting, you know, today just working to put, like I said, bring out some of those documents, organize them a bit. These, like I said, these are probably going to change a lot, but we needed a starting point. And so I've dropped some of this stuff in here and you'll be able to drill down and see, you know, what we've come up with so far. So again, this isn't meant to be Joseph and I kind of saying this is what we're doing, this is how we do it. This is more of just the team being able to reference a single document to talk through as needed and make any changes. So that's really it. I don't know, Joseph, if you have anything you want to add to it, but so just, I mean, look forward to us as a team continuing to build out this documentation, like I said, again, for new people, but also for us going forward.
Yeah, just and a couple of comments on that. Like the past couple of weeks that I've gotten heads down, so this is a good spot for me to say I did not get heads down today. And the things that I said I was going to do at the beginning of the day, as you guys can all see, everyone who was here at the opening ceremonies can see Will did and I did not. So, but the past couple of lab days, the team would know I've been working on a working agreement, and we've done a little bit even of voting internally to put a working agreement together. So that would be part of this as well. And we would hope to release that broadly as well and get that in here. We did run into a barrier, and that's my favorite thing as a product owner to talk about. And the one barrier that we have run into here is this: the homepage there, the handbook. If you click on the handbook, we don't know how, at least Will and I did not know, Wagtail. I would ask Willow, knowing that she has a lot of experience with it, but probably also Alan Tyrell, like the Lofty Agile, we put them at like sub pages there for like the Sprint Retroactive and then Jira tickets. We'd rather those not display on our home, on our landing page for the handbook, but we aren't Wagtail experts, so we don't know how to do these things. So we'll need help in getting this organized the way we'd like it to be organized.
Yeah, sure. I don't know offhand. If anyone else does, speak now.
I clicked around in the CMS just in the background in Wagtail, and but I just am not as familiar with it. And like I said, I know that you all are. I know Willow and I worked on some projects using Wagtail. She's a little wizard at it compared to me for sure. So I don't know if she has any ideas maybe in the future.
I know the page hierarchies are, you know, really important. That's why it's got Treebeard in there. I just like to say Treebeard, and we'll say that a lot of times. Yeah, I'm not sure if it'll require some fiddling with this template here, or if you need like another custom template kind of in the middle, maybe, or something in there. But yeah, that's something we can look at later.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to, Joseph, a lot of this was pulling stuff from documentation that you had already created. So don't try to say that you didn't contribute anything to this. So
fair enough.
Everybody's passing the accolades. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. But you guys did
awesome. Well, just made it look good. That's all.
Well, this stuff is super important though, because as we continue to grow, anything that exists as tribal knowledge, cue the rain stick, becomes like it just doesn't exist outside of people's brains. So formalizing it, putting it in our handbook like this, like that's a lesson that we're learning as we grow, that we have to be explicit about everything. We can't just retain it and then be, oh yeah. So it's good that you guys are setting the example there. I'm continuing to work on the documents from the development side. I realized I need to put Sandy Metz's five rules in the coding stuff, because I've referenced it a couple times now, but it's not been in there. So I'll get that in there. Joseph, feel free to put a card on the ops board for me for that. And I will lean into it for you, sir.
All right. That's all I got. Again, this is a starting point. So we'll continue to refine as a Lofty team going forward.
Sounds good. All right. Daniel, you're up next, sir. What were your learnings today?
Well, I'm not totally done with what I'm working on, but the goal was, we have a project that has quite a bit of Docker container action going on, and it's not always easy to do code inspection for this code without having to also install the dependencies locally. So the goal is to use, since we all use Visual Studio Code, is to try and get Visual Studio Code to engage the remote extension to run, in this case, PHP, through its container, and then do its linting and code sniffing and fixing and all that stuff and debugging via the container. So
before, if you're going to do any screen share, I was about to say, if you're going to do any screen sharing with client code, be sure it's not client code.
No.
The files besides the one where you're just like, this is how things talk to Docker, not our client's code.
The issue I'm running into is that it's expecting something much simpler than our scenario. We have several containers that run together for this particular project. It's not just a simple single container. So the confusion is it's attempting to do just one kind of baseline PHP container. I'm trying to get it to respect our Docker Compose settings. So it's close. It's complaining about the Docker Compose. So it is trying to find it. So it's pretty close. But if I can get that squared away, it's going to put us in a much better position.
So is it trying to go into the Docker, basically into the Docker sphere, if you will, Docker Swarm, which was actually a product for a little while? and really kind of communicate to other containers from there?
No, they have a whole bunch of preset like Node and Python containers out there that are kind of, initially you would start your project from these containers. Mm-hmm. We are trying to take an existing scenario and I'm trying to pull that in instead. So I'm fighting with it on its default settings. But in the situation where, you know, if we were working on a Python project and we have a certain environment that we want to stay relevant to, it seems like it's going to be pretty easy to have this tap into that to do its analysis. Mm-hmm. So I think this particular project is a little more complex and it's, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure once I figure out what it needs to find, it's going to be okay. But it looks like a pretty nice tool for when you want to have, when you want to try and do some code analysis or something like that on a project that's got different context than your host machine.
Gotcha. What's the exact extension?
It is called Remote Containers, and it is by Microsoft.
Nice. I'm trying to remember if that's the one I used. I did this with a Python project, like you mentioned. This is separate, but I did this with one of our clients years ago to help because we had a basically a library that that was the core of the app. They did a lot of machine learning stuff that we would develop on and then pip install into the app outside of that. Mm-hmm. And so we would try and reach into that library and modify stuff in there and use like step of debugging with VS Code. So I don't know if this is the one or not, but I can definitely chat you up about it next week.
Yeah, I think there was another one at some point that was doing a similar approach, but maybe taking a different path. Because what I was looking at had been kind of early in VS Code release. So this one seems to be where they've put more effort in because it can do just, you know, vanilla Docker or Docker Compose or, you know, Docker Swarms, or if you want to start doing your development out on, you know, Azure or whatever, it's got all that stuff kind of baked into it. And it's just a matter of, I think, getting familiar with it, but I think it'll be a real help for this particular project.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is different. This is more of a first-class citizen than the one I used was. This would have been, almost 3 years ago now.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Well, cool. Yeah, I think they had one call that was like VS Code Remote. That used to be kind of the main thing. This one seems like it's superseded.
Yeah, I do love that the GIF of the example on the page is connected to a container called Rust, because it's just you know how much Rust code is getting thrown around.
Yeah,
but it's pretty exciting stuff apparently. So one of us will have to do some stuff with Rust for a Labs Day eventually. Alan, you've done Rust, but not for a Labs Day. You're good.
There it is. I found
all
it.
Right. My window there.
But yeah, I've done a little bit of Rust and Cargo and all that stuff. Made a simple Hello World binary and then ran it on this machine, a few others. Rust is cool. I still for now like Go better. Rust seems really cool if speed is a really, really important factor, or if I want to make an operating system or something, maybe.
Speed is always important. So like when you're building a SNES emulator. So good stuff. Alan, while you're unmuted, why don't you go ahead and go?
Yeah.
My
name's Alan. I use Vim.
Wait, I'm sorry. I had to interrupt it. We have to close them out. We have to close out with
the rain stick. That's wonderful.
That's what that is.
Did anyone ever have a rain stick or have a friend that had a rain stick. Like I definitely knew.
Oh, I had a rain stick.
Okay. I was like, somebody's going to confess to being the friend who had the rain stick. Cause everybody had a friend.
Yeah.
Joseph had the rain stick. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I studied abroad in Australia. So yes.
Nice. I went to New Zealand, and so I had a really cheap, really terrible didgeridoo for a little while, which is funny because didgeridoos are from Australia, but New Zealanders know, like, oh, stupid Americans, they don't care. They just want a didg because they're close to Australia. And so I did. I was like, oh, didgeridoo. And so I got one from New Zealand, and they don't use those in New Zealand, at least not that I've ever heard of.
Did you see any Maori mass?
I did. Yeah, I actually got to go with, like, be on a Maori like site. Like they basically have, they keep compounds is the wrong word, but I think that's actually the word they use
for
each of their clans. Yep. I did. Yep. And got to
that's good. That's good.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I got to get pretty steeply invested in the Maori stuff. It was pretty cool to see like a haka in real life and then do all the go through, and we slept in the Whare Nui, which is like the big house, which is like where they have all of their family tribal ceremonies. And then, yeah, learned like just a handful of Maori words, like kitchen and bathroom. Those are the most important. They all speak English, obviously.
Yeah.
They're like, that's the Whare Paku. That's the Whare Kai. That's a bathroom and kitchen or place to eat, place to go after you eat. And which one? But yeah, saw the masks, saw the haka, and then like
did that's the, where this nose, guy came from.
The nose thing. Oh, a legit Kiwi.
I've been three times. I'm dying to go back anytime.
Yeah. That's awesome. Have you been to the South Island ever?
Just once, and it was real brief. And I only got as far south as Christchurch.
Yeah, I was on the North Island the whole time, in Auckland for most of it, but.
Christchurch is really cool if you get a chance to go back.
I went to, although I did go to like a place called Rotorua, which is basically their Branson.
Yep.
and like I rode land luges and saw a bunch of sheep, because for those who might not know, there are three times the amount of sheep in New Zealand, at least, than there are people. And went through like a cave with hanging glowworms. And it was definitely clear. This is your Branson, but it was just like, hey, that's cool. I'm Branson on the like literally other side of the world. So I dug it.
It's a very cool place.
Yep. Good stuff. All right, Alan. Now that the rain stick has sounded, it's your turn, sir.
Yes. So. I've been working on a Terraform project and some supporting shell scripts around that that we have dubbed Stargate. And it stands up a small rancher cluster that then you could scale up or down, of course, and uses RKE to build out the Kubernetes once you have the infrastructure there. That's kind of the shell script part that I refer to. And then installs Rancher with Helm. And so that's all good. And then I was exploring today what it would look like to put those nodes into an auto-scaling group and put an ALB in front of them, an application load balancer, a layer 7 load balancer, and then do some routing like that. But no luck with that today. So I think I'm going to pair it back and just try a similar approach, but with a classic load balancer, which I'm much more familiar with, in this context. It's kind of frustrating trying to troubleshoot that ALB because it just won't connect and there's no log output or anything to see, not real sure what's happening there. But I also know, for everyone out there that's kind of on that same road, I know that Rancher is kind of notorious for sometimes not playing real nice with other load balancers and stuff, and sometimes is picky about the headers that get passed through and everything. So when you use a classic load balancer, they tell you basically just punch through TCP. So TCP 80 to 80, and then actually run an SSL layer for your 443 port and not an HTTPS layer. And I've had luck with that. And because then inside I can use layer 7 load balancers, inside being inside the Rancher Kubernetes cluster, and I can stand up ingresses and stuff and do some more fine grained routing that way. That's Stargate.
You were standing up an ALB in AWS. And then obviously, yeah, that's I don't know that we've successfully used an ALB on the outside of one of our Kubernetes clusters yet. We've done ELBs plenty and then had the ALB on the inside.
Am I getting that backwards? Well, no, we've done it twice. It's what I was holding up the two fingers, but twice out of like 6 or 7 other times with classic load balancers. So part of the inspiration for Stargate is we've had some Terraform code laying around for a few years now that one of our previous developers had worked on. It was kind of a parting gift for us. And that one uses an ALB and target groups. But I remember him having a really hard time with that. And I probably even suggested like, man, just use a classic load balancer. But he got it working. So I thought I would give it a try again, because if we could get it working, you know, we might be able to get some more routing with just one load balancer instead of multiple. So you can get a little bit more out of an ALB. But I know, you know, it may be intercepting those headers, though, and something. So I've got some documentation and stuff, some homework to do on ALB settings for Rancher based on the Rancher documentations.
Yeah, I like that. My concern would be just knowing how persnickety Terraform is. The moment we got an ALB set up with it, and then modified that ALB at all in AWS, Terraform would be like, you're dead to me, move on. Because otherwise we'd have to do everything in Terraform, which makes sense in a Terraform context. But like, we're just not, we've never fully gone in all the way on Terraform, which is
right. It's
not ideal. You know,
it's almost a Robin Peter to pay Paul kind of a thing, because on the other side of that, I've stood up a staging environment for one of our clients this week by hand, and that has taken many days. And so that's where it's always the temptation to like, oh man, but if I could do it all with the Terraform script in an afternoon, that would be great. But you're absolutely right, Tyrell. Once you use Terraform, it keeps its state in state files, and that's how it's able to manage what it stood up. And so you can Terraform destroy and take everything down, and you're not accumulating bills that you might not be aware of, and all of that.
Yeah, that's it's easy to forget when you just run a script that you may have lit half your wallet on fire in AWS.
Real quick, those ALBs and I think I'm using a T3 medium for now, and both those guys can add up pretty quick. That being said, you can do a little bit of customization outside of Terraform, and Terraform still know what all's out there. It's really, you got to be careful with like adjusting VPCs, NAT gateways, and little things like that. Anything new that you add, you know, Terraform's not going to know about.
Go ahead.
I did a little bit of tinkering with that ALB. And the Route 53 DNS record is another thing that it's creating. So it makes a rancher dot whatever my domain is record and points that to the load balancer. And so I tweaked that a little bit, and Terraform didn't bark about that or anything. It's really when you add other services and stuff that it's unaware of.
Gotcha. Yeah. Awesome stuff. Well, keep at it. I know that that's going to continue to save us significant time.
Yeah. Yeah.
We might be finding a new application for it, depending on how an infrastructure conversation I'm having with a client goes, because they're uncomfortable with the cloud. I'll put it that way. They have trepidations. And so I'm going to have a conversation about like what it looks like when you go on-prem and you get, it's just like, here, you get an ops now. we DevOps, but when you do that, you get a nice ops for yourself that we don't get to do anymore to a degree. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, but we might be using that outside of the AWS context, kind of like we did with the Azure one. Maybe that might be the medium or the kind of compromise we end up at, which is deploying it to Azure, which I've already given them a warning like, hey, so if we go into Azure, we're going to fight your Active Directory. So I need your Active Directory admin, like on speed dial. So that we do literally everything and it touches all kinds of things.
Yeah.
I can say we need permission for this and for this and for this and for this. So we'll see. I don't know that I'm gonna be able to adventure. Yeah, it's an exciting time. It's gonna be an exciting call. I'm probably gonna get to have like a call with an old school data center guy. And like I haven't seen one of those in a while. It'll be
a real life sysadmin.
I know.
Lots of prayers, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Send them and some like Doritos that I can pay as a tribute before we have the conversation. I have so much respect for those guys and don't want to be one at all. So cool. Good stuff. All right, Willow, you're next. As I look through the boxes.
Okay. I did Neo4j.
Yes, you did.
Let's see.
So did you did the whole you did the whole project or did you focus on Neo4j?
I didn't do the whole project. What I did was I took the existing project and then I took the one I made last week and combined them sort of.
Oh, nice. Okay, so I'm interested to see this. I also spent time in Neo4j land today, and I got excited, and then I realized there's a potential just to do this in PostGIS, so it made Neo4j less necessary in my mind, which made me sad, but I want to see what you got too, because you've obviously got the Neo4j interaction tool up, and that's the best part of Neo4j, is clicking on bubbles and dragging them around.
Yeah, so I got the sandbox with what's it called? OpenStreetMap.
Yeah.
They made an existing one that they exported as Central Park. It is what they used in their app.
Mm-hmm.
And then
did you try and import OpenStreetMap data for this client? Or is this their data?
This is the Central Park data.
Perfect. Again, just trying to always stay ahead of like unintentionally exposing client facing stuff that they wouldn't want exposed.
I couldn't export it because they made a thing that can convert the data, the OpenStreetMap to Neo4j, and then you can get it out with the GraphQL, but I didn't want to run the Java stuff on my computer, so I didn't.
No one wants to do that. You got to get a new Java runtime.
So I have the Node server running and serving up the GraphQL. And then I have the points of interest, which is the main thing they had in this data set. And then I just kind of marked them off with little bubbles. For some reason, if you click the bubble sometimes, the app crashes. I don't know why, but it does.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Were you able to get the routing algorithms in place? Or did you get to that part of the... So for everybody, here, Willow and I both kind of, Willow discovered a tutorial on building custom wayfinding with a buckle up. This is going to be fun. Gatsby, GraphQL, and Neo4j. And so,
yeah, I'm not using the Gatsby part. I have detached it.
Yeah. It's a really cool experiment. And honestly, like, all of those techs are legitimate. I make the joke about buckle up. They're just so far out of our stack that it's funny to go like, hey, we're going to look at this with all of these techs. But it was a good exercise. And I started on video four, so, or part four of the tutorial, just specifically wanting to see how to use Neo4j for custom route finding. And so Willow did all the hard work leading up to that. I just jumped in at part four. Yeah.
This.
Yep.
This is easy to find the route to POI, shortest path.
Yeah, so they're using, did you see the part where they were talking about the algorithms they were looking to use, the different algorithms? Because right now it's just using shortest path.
No, I didn't really.
Cool.
I wasn't that interested in that part. I was like, math, no.
No, that's totally understandable. That's great though, because like that kind of fits our roles perfectly on this project. While I'm sitting as solutions architect going just like, ooh, which algorithm? You're just like, I don't want to deal with that. I'm just going to implement, which is perfect. Because I got really excited about the different algorithms that were available in Neo4j. They have a data science library that I was really impressed with. Did you get to look into that at all?
No.
Okay.
I was just trying to figure out, like, looking at the query language and this thing for a while.
Yeah, I'll stop running over the top of you. I'm sorry. I just get excited about it. So, sweet. What else? Did you like what you found with Neo4j?
Yeah. It's not bad.
I'm interested to see if it is... atomic's not the word. What's the word I'm looking for? There's another word for it. But basically, I don't know if you're supposed to treat Neo4j like it's ephemeral, like you would Redis or Elasticsearch, or if its persistence is truly persistent, like Postgres. Because like,
I was going to get, they have a Docker image, and I was going to get that running.
I saw that, yeah.
But then I was like, then I won't actually get work done.
Nice. That's the interesting place that I was kind of considering, because I don't think we need to use Neo4j as like our primary data store, but I could be wrong in this context, because they seem to be using it as their primary data store.
But a lot of people use Mongo for a database too.
Yeah. Bless their hearts. I dug into the algorithm portion of this to kind of key off of where you went, Willow. I don't want to stop. And if you've got more you want to demonstrate, I did it again. I'm terrible.
No, so. I don't.
Cool.
Really?
Were you able to get a route line up in the app in the day?
What?
A route, like a route drawn for your points of interest?
I didn't try that, because what I was trying to do was get pop-ups for my markers.
Oh, yeah.
And then get, because they had this thing that they put in there. It was like Mapillary.
Yep.
And for some reason, I was trying to sign up for that, and it just wouldn't let me. It just kept saying, sign in. I'm like, I just did.
What's funny is I think that the guy who did the video ran into that at the beginning of the video I watched. And so like the solution for that is at the beginning of the video I watched. Because he's like, all right, we're part four. And he starts firing everything up and he starts running into errors with Mapillary, which is an open It's an open source supplement.
Cool. I looked at the thing because it lets you look at stuff a little bit, and it's just like you can get pictures from everywhere.
Yeah, so like it's basically Google Street View, right?
A little bit.
But you can consume it. So you can take all the images and data out of it. It's an open version of that. So you can pair it with Open Street View and create that more similar experience. And this tutorial, actually, this is from one of the guys who works at Neo4j, but it pulls in Wikipedia information about the points of interest as well.
Yeah.
So
I saw that one, but it's like HTML stuff, so it's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get, like, because it has, like, types of points, and then the, can you say it, like, is it a walking path or not, or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get all that as a pop-up whenever you go over the points, but it was being weird. Probably partially because it's on a phone.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't have done that if I had actually done a real web app.
That'd be interesting. So one thing that I'd love to know if you've got to, because so I like I say, I picked up at the algorithm piece and was looking at the data science library that bolts onto Neo4j. And they were talking, then they went into the algorithms at length, which is really cool. And they're talking about, and I think, Daniel, I think you're the only official CS major here, so you might be able to say the name correctly. I'm going to butcher it because I've already forgotten how to say it, and I never remember. Dijkstra algorithm?
Yeah, I heard him talk about it.
Oh, man, it's been a long time since I had to worry about any of that stuff.
That's it, Dijkstra. So Dijkstra traversing for weighted traverses. So, like, what it does is it takes the relationship between all the points of interest, and you can, so the shortest, if you use the built-in shortest path, it goes by shortest path just based on relationships. So you go from one place to the other, and it goes through all the connected relationships of all the points of interest to get you there. And it just goes by fewest relationships.
When he started doing that and clicking on the stuff, I was like, Oh, hell no. I ain't doing that. I mean, I still watched it, but I was like, oh, God, no.
Yeah. See, that was funny. Because like I said, that was just like, oh, I got stoked. Because, you define the relationship with a distance. And what it'll do is it'll calculate the overhead. It'll calculate the value and give you a weighted shortest distance. So it says, okay, we want... So it'll do a full tree traverse, but it's calculating it by distance. And so it determines, like, based on what you define the weight to be based on, gives you the smallest weight to your destination node. And so, and then he showed one that was an A-star algorithm, which does that, but it also has a heuristic function that allows you to make sure that you're always moving toward your destination. So it's more precise, but it's less efficient because you're running that extra function all the time to make sure you're always headed in that direction. So
if I was going to put a path in, I was just going to use it to get the coordinates out and then use my map box. I had a helper thing that would figure out the path, and then I would have just used that.
Yeah. See, I think there's a place where we'll get to do that. I think that there'll be a way for us to do that. And get that back and implement it within the client that we're building stuff on.
If it like is faster to get it out of here through those two things, and then you just like consume it for one part of the app.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I found out there's actually a library called PG Routing, which is an implementation of these algorithms on top of PostGIS. So we can potentially, because that was I had one of those moments where I saw behind the curtain enough to go like, oh, that's all they're doing? That's it? Oh, hold on, let me see. And so now I know the magic incantation to go and like type in and then add the keyword PostGIS, and then bang, here it is, PG routing. So it's like, oh, sweet, custom routing in PostGIS with the same algorithms they're implementing in Neo4j. And so
very nice.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. the one thing I need to know, and I don't know if you know this, Willow, or if you caught this, was how they're determining the paths, because we can, it'll determine distance. It'll demonstrate distance, but how does it not have you walk through a building yeah. just based on shortest, like point to point nautical distance as
the crow flies? I don't know.
So that's the last piece of the magic that I don't have that I'm excited to find. But yeah, so that's where I ended up for my lab day. I was happy to get into that too. So that's sweet that our work kind of converged at that point. You lost interest and I gained interest. Makes complete sense. Well, next, Justin. Justin's new to the team. He'll be new to the podcast. We're excited to have him. He spent some time. Justin, what did you spend some time on today? I know, but I didn't want to answer for you because that makes me sound super awkward.
I spent most of the day just playing with Headless Swagtail, trying to get that API figured out. Kind of got stuck trying to figure out how to render the previews since there aren't any templates for the back end to use. I got it working, but it looks like poop.
That's all right. Put some poop on the screen if you don't mind. If you've got it to put up there. I've put poop on the screen plenty of times. If not, no worries.
Set up. It'll let me.
Uncle Joseph. Okay, no, we have screen sharing. We're good. All right.
Can you see it or no?
Yep, we got it. Breaking news.
Sweet. And yeah. So like on the front ends, like I just have it centered. But then, like that's the preview.
Okay.
So it doesn't. It's like you have to do your own. I'm sure there's a cleaner way to do this, but I just had to do a bunch of if blocks to see what the different things were and then tell it how to render them. I'm sure there's a better way to do that, but then I don't know how to copy over like styles and all of that. So sure. That's what I was looking into for a good portion of the day.
Okay. So this is content you submitted into Wagtail.
Yeah.
And then you had, sweet. And you had the front end is all in Vue. So this is Headless Wagtail being served into a Vue SPA, correct? Awesome. That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's it works. I wasn't a fan of their API at first, but it's as I'm using it more, it's get a little better.
So. Nice. I like that right there. I'm having flashbacks. Is this Angel Fire?
No, this is Final Fantasy.
Nice.
Sweet. Well, yeah, I'm excited to see what we can do with that. Because that's a way that we've not leveraged Wagtail yet, like as a company, to go headless with it. Since we've really bought into the SPA paradigm and using Vue as our front-end framework, to know that there's first-class relationships there with headless Wagtail going into a Vue app. I know that was like an additional library for the preview.
Yeah.
But
it's just called Wagtail Headless Preview, I think.
I think you're right. Oh yeah, there it is. That's the one. Yep. Sweet.
Yeah, it's not too hard to set up. So I just couldn't figure out how to, because everything goes through this one HTML file for the previews, so I couldn't figure out how to make it clean enough to dynamically handle everything.
So is it passing that HTML file into the Vue app, do you know?
No, it runs under its own HTTP server.
Okay.
So it tells you to just cd into that client directory and and run the HTML.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure we'll get it figured out with some time.
Yeah.
That's sweet. Also, good to know you're a Final Fantasy man.
Oh, yeah.
Noted.
Also, I'm happy that Final Fantasy can be confused with a 90s HTML based website provider.
I love that somebody at least knew what Angel Fire meant.
I was just happy to hear it call out. I was like, yes.
I was like, yeah. Where did you get that code from my seventh grade project? I thought I deleted it.
That's great. That's your old Zynga site, Chris.
You know it.
I had the same thought though. When you said Angel Fire, I was just like the hosting.
I thought it was some old game that I hadn't heard of. Sounds like but a game.
Was it an Angel Fire site? Was that what you were saying? Were you referring to the hosting, Alan?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 100%. Cool. Yeah.
See, I thought, well, and just.
But I was just going to leave it though, if like, like, no, that's Final Fantasy. It's like, yeah, okay, cool.
That's what I was saying. Like, when Justin said it, I was like, that's a legit, like, that's as good of a name as Final Fantasy. Like, yeah, that could have been, that's easily confused. I'm glad that that was 1990s for us. There's a lot about the 90s.
Yeah. And Justin, you wouldn't know, but Alan's our resident, our most senior D&D aficionado. Most of us dabble, but Alan.
I've got my old second edition books still up in the closet. They're always good. Like anytime a newer fan sees those, like, oh man, you're old school. It's like, yeah, I guess so.
So I just assumed it was a D&D reference when you were just like, is that Angel Fire? It's like, I don't know what version that's in.
I knew.
Nice. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well,
yeah, that is cool.
All right. Let's see. Who do we have next on the old wheel? We'll get it. Let's see here. Trent. You're up, sir.
Yeah, today was good. I definitely wanted to spend some time with Stripe. Kind of as an excuse to get a little bit more comfy with Docker. Mm-hmm. Before Lofty, I had never really touched Docker, and it's always been one of those really spooky things for me. And I kind of religiously used Firebase Cloud Functions in place of Docker to solve certain Stripe-esque problems, but I can kind of show you what I got here.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and got a Stripe environment set up on the Mac here, and it's got Vue on the front end, and it's running. You can see here I got Docker up and running, but it also has all the Firebase stuff in there as well, so it works with both Firebase and Docker. But I have a checkout page here where I can add a few of these hats to a cart, and it'll redirect me to a checkout page, and I can put in my information. So they have test cards in Stripe that you can use when you're using test mode here, and that's always the same. It's just 4242, and just put in like a random CV.
Yeah, they have different combinations for like if you wanted to test out MacArt or other kinds on there.
Yeah, they have a 3D secure card as well. Yeah. I don't know if this is set up to handle 3D secure, but that's definitely something I'm looking into. So you can see that the payment went through. It doesn't redirect anywhere just yet, but if I go over here to the Stripe dashboard, under payments, can see that the 1598 is in there now. So that's all wired up. In addition to this one-time payment component that I have as well. So you can just throw a number in there, like 130, which so it's gonna use the lowest denomination for any currency. So 130 is gonna mean $1.30 rather than $130. So, and I'll try 120 since I already used 130 before. It's gonna ask you to put in a card.
It is always hard to remember that Stripe thinks in the lowest denomination, so everything's in pennies.
Yeah, now that I think about it, I probably should have put some formatting in the text field there. And that's another thing. Like, this is so, this could look so much nicer. Like, this, I would not put my payment information in a field like this.
Yes. Or click the Zoom link that it provides you.
There we go. And the $1.20 is in there as well. And kind of just experimenting with some like different interactions. So we have like a slider here that could probably be used in like a donation portal sort of case. So there could be some fun stuff you could do with that. But this works as well. You just throw in the same card information.
This is going to be our new Patreon, by the way. Put your money here.
The slider context is cool because you can make it interactive and then like it unlocks with Patreon, for example, unlock different levels of patron access. But I think we've only got one perk, which is the we send you we've got a couple. I'll have to look into that. I'm speaking to things ignorantly, so I'll stop. That doesn't stop me before, though, so there.
It doesn't stop us.
No.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever used like the Patreons or anything. And I'm curious how they like handle the user interaction with sending an amount for like a donation, for example, because I feel like that's something that you could easily kind of gamify. But this is just a really bare bones sort of user flow here.
That's good though. One thing I like about that is, I mean, just where your head's at in like the gamification of payment collection, to incentivize increasing that. That's just not a headspace I would have gone to with it, but that's cool to think of it that way.
Definitely would love to experiment with this some more.
You know who's really good at gamifying your money? Casinos.
Casinos.
They are the kings of gamifying your money.
You messed around with the Robinhood app?
Oh, I was, for some reason you said Robinhood, not that Red Robin. I was like the burgers?
No, that place that tricks kids into option trading.
Yep.
Gamifies option trading, yeah.
Yeah.
I did all right for myself with a little Robinhood action.
Yeah.
You got in on that GameSpot a little bit a while back.
I may have stopped some games.
Man, do what you got to do.
I may have had some diamond hands for a brief period, and then it turned out they were cubic zirconian. Yep.
Yeah, on the UX side of things, it's definitely something I noticed is a sort of subliminal gamification that you see in a lot of apps like that, which is for better or worse, I guess.
It depends on who you are in the equation, whether it's for better or worse.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's fascinating stuff.
So this page here is actually, this one's using Firebase for authentication specifically. And So I wanted to throw in an off in here so that I can add multiple payment methods if I need to. So if I log in with this account, I can see that I have 3 cards and I'm able to fetch those from Stripe and I can see those in the customer's dashboard. And I can see those same 3 cards here. And I can either add one through the dashboard or I can create a new card in here. And it would just be the same card number. But yeah. As long as I give it a different zip code and expiration date, then it'll consider it a different card.
Let's say 89, that's long expired. Or really, really, really far from right. expiring.
I like my cards to last a lifetime, so I don't deal with renewing them.
Yeah, it is a giant pain. I had someone steal a card for gas recently, and I've been fighting that ever since.
So we've got our new card in there that's added right on the fly.
Nice.
And you can go ahead and sign out. I have a subscription tag, but... that one is still under construction. I still have to sign in with Firebase. But the whole thing was kind of blowing up as I was trying to sort through this part. So that's something I'm definitely wanting to untie in the short term. But I see a lot of... you know, I come across a lot of use cases for these sorts of payment flows. It feels good to be a little bit more fluent with Stripe in conjunction with Docker. So, you know, a lot of the freelance sites that I used to work on required a lot of this sort of stuff. And so hopefully this is something that I can implement in a real world project sooner than later.
Oh yeah. Stripe's our go-to. Stripe did a smart thing in making sure they were like the most developer friendly payment gateway imaginable. And I'm sure it's just because they also felt the pain of trying to work with PayPal and were just like, this is terrible. There's got to be a better way. So
yeah. Whenever I think of like good API documentation, Stripe is always my first example. They got it right.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing, Trent.
Sure.
Last but not least, Megan.
Hello. How goes it?
It goes great.
Great.
So this will probably be like my first and only time for this recording because I am doing or completing a Foundations of Project Management certificate. And it's about like, it's projected to be 6 months long. I think more like 4 months, I would say. I'm ready on week 3. But yeah, that's what I'll be doing all Fridays for lab days.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Is it on demand or do they have stuff scheduled for you?
It's scheduled. They give you 4 weeks. It's in 4 week intervals. So I'm on the last for this baby. And then I'll have a whole new set next week, I believe, or maybe the following week after that, I'll have a whole new set of information for the next 4 weeks. So actually maybe I will have to complete it in 6 months then. Fuck my life. We'll see. I thought I could like breeze through, but I don't know. We'll see. Freaking Google.
Nah, that's good. Google. Always cool. Well, I'm excited to hear like the stuff you're getting out of it for sure. Maybe teach Will and Joseph a thing or two.
Share my learning for today. It was kind of interesting because it kind of like ties into Lofty and the way we do things, but it just like touched a little bit on waterfall agile and then like Scrum, Kanban, Lean Six, and like just honing in on each one of those approaches and what they're best used for and where they're best used for. But.
That's great. We won't ask you on the recording to tell us which one you think is best because we use one of those around here and we don't want to start.
I like all of them.
There, that is the appropriate answer. You're ready to run for office. That was well done. All right, cool. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for sticking around a little later. Glad to hear everybody had productive days. It was fun. So, any closing thoughts or comments? Anything burning? That's a good, awkward silence. I appreciate it.
I was going to say, not my chicken house today, so that's good.
Wait, you what? Your chicken house today?
No, you said anything burning, but I think you meant the question. I said, not my chicken house today, so that's good.
Yeah, it's true. Unfortunately, Alan lost his chicken house to a fire earlier this week.
But the chickens are fine. So that's the true story.
That's the most important part.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, there was a lot there.
What caused the fire?
It was a heat lamp the other day when it got back down to freezing. And then it slid off. It's a pretty common thing actually in the chicken world. But yeah, so they're in a dog igloo now, and I brought that up because one of my weekend projects is to break down what's remaining of it because it's right next to where they sleep. So at night for the past like week, they've been very confused and they just stare at their old door, which is one of the things that survived. And they just line up on the fence and just stare at their door, and they're like, "I can't. It used to be much more comfortable, and we could get it in there."
That is absolutely an analogy for something. I just don't know what.
Terrific. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Chickens are full of them for stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to get rid of that and make it for them to figure out where they sleep.
Cool. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Hey, everyone.
Good weekend. Yeah. Yeah.
See you on Monday.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow @FridayDeploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.